Are you passionate about resolving conflicts and making positive impact in the world? Then USD's Conflict Management and Resolution Master's Program may be for you. Learn to address conflicts at all levels, from personal disputes to global crises. Join the Kroc School's dedicated community fostering peace and understanding while you acquire practical skills to navigate diverse settings. Apply now and be the change you want to see in the world. Visit sandiego.edu/peace/VOSD. That's sandiego.edu/peace/VOSD. Join culture creator Ramel Wallace, museum CEO Micah Parzon, philanthropist Erwin Jacobs, and urban agriculturist Diane Moss on Season 2 of Stop and Talk, a podcast about the future of the San Diego region. How can we create a vibrant region that celebrates our cultural richness and economic strength? Find out and hear other San Diego experts on Stop and Talk. Discover seasons 1 and 2 now at stopandtalkpodcast.com. That's stopandtalkpodcast.com. This podcast is brought to you in part by the estate of Bob Nelson. Bob was a lover of all things San Diego and a longtime supporter of Voice of San Diego and its podcasts. We at Voice of San Diego are honored to have his support during his lifetime and continued support through his estate planning. Are you looking to engage with regional decision makers, business leaders, elected officials, and industry professionals committed to improving downtown San Diego? Join the Downtown San Diego Partnership. As a member, you'll receive access to exclusive resources, exposure to special programming, networking functions, and additional opportunities unmatched by any other local membership-based organization. Join the driving forces behind the future of downtown San Diego. For a 10% discount, become a member today.
Welcome to the Voice San Diego podcast in partnership with News Radio 600 Coco. I'm Scott Lewis, CEO and Editor-in-Chief at Voice San Diego. I'm joined, as always, by Andy Keats, Managing Editor at Voice San Diego. Hello, Andy.
What's up, my man?
Much, thank you. And fellow Managing Editor, Andrea Lopez Villafaña. What is up, Lopez?
Hey, Lewis.
It's great to see you.
Same.
Coming up on the show this week, it's the election draft episode you've been waiting for. Before every election, we here at Voice San Diego draft the races we are most looking forward to seeing resolved. Mm-hmm. And then on election night, we'll go back through those races. It's quite a cycle. It's just a perfect circle.
Mm-hmm. It's a content mill.
We'll be examining also this week some of the most potent political messages we've come across. We'll look at mailers, social media ads, and TV spots to break down the messages. And if any political ad ever says what it actually means, or what it's actually advocating for. Get your picks lined up and stay with us. So Andy and I disagree about things that are fun that the world embraces. And one of those things was this.
The NLCS to face the Phillies, they had to get through the Dodgers, and arguably the star of that series was not a player from either team, but the goose that landed on the field, of course, at Dodger Stadium in Game 2.
So you might have wondered.
That's the goose, the rally goose, San Diego goose. Lots of interpretations, got its own mural. It was a big deal. Now, I was at a party the other night, yeah, and we were talking about the goose, and this lady, one of my friends, was just like, I just love that there was something cute and pure that we could all have and that was just part of our community and that we could just be, you know, we could just all rally behind this thing that came. And it's just, for once, I didn't have to think about all the problems and all the things wrong with the world and everything going on. It's just this cool little goose. And in my head, I was sitting there thinking the entire time she's talking that I had just been briefed on a story that we were running through the newsroom about how the goose was probably debilitated by a terrifying disease and struggling because of what climate change had done to its traditional migratory pattern.
A disease that's like threatening all bird populations in Southern California.
Like, and I'm sitting there, I'm like, yeah, you're right. I need to tell her.
That's impressive.
You had a chance to explain something.
Yeah. I mean, I'll just say for myself, like, I can't restrict myself in those situations. I would have had to have been like, yeah, it's probably dead now, and it probably killed lots of other birds when they released it back into the population.
That's on,
like,
brand for you.
I don't think I would have been able to, like, even if I wanted to, I would not have been able to just do a normal party thing and let that go and say enjoy my drink. I couldn't have done it.
I think sometimes maybe I'm like a little self-conscious that we just go around bagging on things that people like.
And I am too. I just can't not do it.
I know. Obviously, I continue to help lead an organization to do it. I'm in. Yeah. I'm in on being the throw the water on the parade thing guy.
Yeah.
The party pooper. But that would have literally been a party pooper.
Yeah. Did you just quietly send her the link when Mackenzie's story published this week?
I should, huh?
No additional comment, no initial analysis.
Well, she's one of those like sort of quarter readers who like only vaguely knows what I do.
Okay.
And like, I don't know. I feel like there's other things.
Oh, yeah. It would be a hostile act. I think you should do it probably.
Well, explain. So Mackenzie decides she wants to dig in and understand as best she can both why the bird was where it was and why it landed so awkwardly on the field in Dodger Stadium. What did we get out of that?
Well, so an expert said, I immediately recognized the bird's erratic behavior as probably the result of it being infected with the avian flu.
Mm-hmm. And then there was the question of why it was even in that area, that LA used to be a pasture of ponds and things that when geese sleep, they have to sleep in the water.
Yeah.
And there were ample places for it to be as they went through. But now LA is not like that. LA is like really developed. I don't know if you've heard.
And without water on account of the drought.
Yes. And so they would normally stay in the Sacramento region, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that they're making their way more and more south looking for these ponds and places to stop.
Yep.
And that's why it was there. And it probably landed where it did because of some debilitating mm-hmm. illness.
I just love that part in her story where she's like explaining like what this goose was doing for everybody at the moment. Like people were making stickers, people were buying like little plastic geese, like, you know, it was like a whole thing. People were like, oh my God, you'll have to help me out here. It's the spirit of whatever baseball player. What was his name?
Goose Gossage.
Yes. Like, you know, she like
explains. No, they think it was really him, right?
Yeah. It's like this whole thing. And meanwhile, there's like experts watching this like, oh my God, this goose is probably super sick.
Yeah. You know? It's like somebody who studies the animal and is just at home horrified, just like, oh, this is so bad.
And then there's the other part, like the Dodgers won't say what happened to the goose, right? Like everybody's like, we humanely released.
Well, but here's what's so funny is they clearly chose the path of least resistance to say like, well, we humanely released the bird. Which allows everybody to go, oh, thank goodness.
Yeah, like it just flew away and
which is
met its
friends. If this is accurate, then it's releasing a infected bird into the population to go infect the rest of the bird population.
Right.
It's not humane to do that.
And if it's inaccurate, then what did they do?
Right.
And
which probably they don't want to say.
Probably don't want to say.
Yeah.
So happy Saturday, San Diego.
Yeah.
Sorry. Lopez.
What's up?
There is a contradiction in the universe.
Mm-hmm.
And that is that everyone says that they don't read mail that is sent to them from campaigns and that they throw it right into the recycling bin.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, that's all that campaigns do, and it works. So one of them is wrong, right?
Uh-huh.
And my thinking is that people actually do read it, and it does matter. And I am a avowed aficionado of all mail people send in. I like to highlight them. And so we are going to do a little section about mail, about social media ads and other things we've seen. And stand out, and what the like underlying messages are saying and not saying, and what some of them mean that they would never say in another context, right? Like, it's fascinating, some of these things, right? So,
yeah.
Andy, we'll start with you.
Okay.
You on Instagram came across a beautiful specimen. Can you describe it, please?
Yeah, it was.
Now, I include Instagram in this discussion.
Yeah, the social media ones.
Yeah. I've gotten more ads on Instagram.
Yeah. So on Instagram, there was one for Measure B,
yeah.
The People's Ordinance. It's important to stipulate with mail pieces that their job is not to actually explain what the measure does in clear terms.
They spend they do a lot of publishing, a lot of words, and they never want you to understand what exactly is happening.
There's like more complicated. It's like they decide what type of person you want to see yourself as.
Oh my God, I just got an idea. We should do a mailer. Okay. In the same style, but that is just about explaining what it actually does.
Ooh.
Interesting. Okay, we'll need $500,000.
Let's circle back.
All right, let's describe this one, Instagram.
So this Instagram one was for Measure B. This is would change the People's Ordinance to allow the city to charge a fee for anybody who gets trash collection from the city of San Diego.
Yeah. It doesn't implement the fee, allows them to after some study.
Yeah. What the ad said was Measure B corrects a 100-year-old law that allows some people to be charged for trash pickup twice. Now, in a certain way of viewing Measure B, that is a perfectly fine description of what it does.
Right.
That people who live in apartments.
Most people who live in apartments and condos,
they pay a property tax either because they own their home, they own their condo and they pay a property tax, or because their landlord owns the home and pays a property tax and passes that cost on to them in the means of rent.
Mm-hmm.
And then also because they get their trash taken from them through private companies that come and pick up their dumpsters, they have to pay directly to that company. So they pay twice. Whereas single-family homeowners pay their property tax, and with that they get trash service, but they don't have to pay a specific fee for that. What's odd about that, though, is it concedes a really major point in this fight, which is often you'll hear people who think we should change the People's Ordinance describe it as saying that the People's Ordinance allows single-family homeowners to get trash collection for free.
Yes.
If you say that people who live in apartments are paying twice, you're conceding that they don't get it for free, that paying your property tax, out of which the city pays for trash collection, is necessarily paying for trash.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's in any other context. If this was a debate, if this was like something that was being introduced in a news story for the first time, conceding that people, that everyone does pay for trash service would be huge. It would be such a major getaway. And also, it doesn't mention that their solution to this problem is to make sure that everyone pays for trash collection twice.
Yeah.
Not we're going to correct this by making sure that everyone pays for it only once, which would be, I think, the implication of what would be fair based on what they're saying in the ad.
Yeah. They could have just, you know, I guess
It's wrong to pay twice. Therefore, we're going to fix the old law by making sure everyone pays just once. That is not what they're doing. By the logic of the ad, they're going to make sure everyone pays twice.
Yeah. No, I think that you run into all these issues when you talk about this thing. First of all, it's not all single family home owners. Like if you are on a private street that's not maintained by the city, then you have to have a private hauler come to your street too, even if you have a big, beautiful single family home.
Yeah.
And it's not all apartment buildings that have to pay for private haulers to come. Some of them can get their trash to a city maintained street, and thus the city takes their trash without a special fee.
I live in a 4-unit complex we do not pay a private hauler.
Right.
We are able to get our trash to the alley, which is the city service.
People out there, stop it.
Yes.
By and large.
Yes. The easy way to explain this is by acknowledging that in the vast majority of circumstances on both sides of this.
Yeah.
It's single family and multifamily. And if you really want to dispute that, it's not for the sake of clarity. It's for the sake of obfuscation.
Yeah. All right. Great specimen. Thank you.
Wow.
Thank you for that.
I was fascinated. When I saw it, I was like looking down. I was like, what are they going to say? Are they going to? But no, they just say, you know, some people have to pay twice. Isn't that unfair? Both for us.
You're just like waiting.
And none of the Measure B ones actually say, like, the mailer never says, hey, here's why it'd be great to pay a special fee for trash.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, they just like move around like all the things that would happen if the fee was implemented.
Yeah.
But never like just confront people with it.
I want to be clear that like, I don't think that like mail pieces should be held to the standard of like
journalism.
Yeah. Like I get it. You got a campaign to run. It's fine. I'm just fascinated by the implications of the arguments that are used if we actually accept them at face value.
Yeah. All right. I'm going to do one.
Go. Mm-hmm.
Cody Pedersen is running for school board.
Yeah.
He's running for school board against Becca Williams. Mm-hmm. This is for the coastal district of the San Diego Unified School District. And so it's in most interesting race of them. They're both fierce campaigners, and they've raised money, he has a lot of support from the teachers union. She has a lot of support from people who want to hold the district accountable, more reform. And they're, and you know, obviously the Democrat versus Republican sort of framing has really come up, right? So the teachers union's painted her as a Texas Republican MAGA extremist, and the business communities painted him as a nightmare liberal, you know, and so it's got all the characteristics of a classic battle, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially in this town, we don't really get many like straightforward left and right,
yeah,
simple mm-hmm. political spectrum races anymore.
Yeah, so this is an ad mailer sent by the teachers association.
Oh my
union.
God, that's bad.
What?
Picture.
Oh yeah, she's got a picture of Becca Williams standing with former President Trump, but he's got a real dour look on his face.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. So on the other side, though,
that's photoshopped, right? They didn't.
Yeah, I think so.
And it's like black and white.
Yeah.
And
like, oh, always black and white.
Yeah.
Always
scary.
Black and white. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But his side on the other side is the pro side for Cody Pedersen.
Bright and sunny.
The teachers union has supported him, and this is again the teachers union's mailer.
Mm-hmm.
The San Diego Education Association sent this mailer out, published this mailer, and sent it to my house. It says, he's a public school dad. Okay.
Me too.
Welcome.
Yeah.
Welcome to the club.
And he says he's got a plan to tackle learning loss. Quote, Cody knows kids are struggling. He'll reduce class sizes and add tutoring and extracurriculars to help students catch up on lost academics and missed childhood experiences. So this is the teachers union saying there was a significant learning loss that occurred because of the COVID restrictions and shutdowns of schools that they did and the online learning that they tried to replace it with, and that kids are struggling.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a year ago or so, that was an extremely controversial take, and that the teachers union would be very mad for you to insinuate.
Yes.
And now it's just what they send to my house as fact.
as why you should vote for their preferred
Here,
candidate.
Scott. Yeah. Check this out.
Like if I had maintained that kids are struggling last year.
And that there was learning loss that was because of pandemic related restrictions.
They would have been like, no, you are biased against us.
Yeah.
That's an incorrect or challengeable statement. That's crossing a line.
Yeah.
And now it's just, okay, he's going to tackle it. Like we skipped over it.
Yeah.
You know,
it is interesting. I wonder what I don't know here. So unlike the Measure B one that we just said,
yeah,
no part of me thinks that like they intend to like carry through the logic that they put forward in that Measure B.
Absolutely not.
What I do wonder about this is this an indication of how much that conversation has changed in a year? Or is this saying what you need to say in the moment that you'll discard as soon as the election's over.
Oh, I absolutely believe that this one's actually targeting my wife.
Yeah.
That they've done research that she is concerned about that, which she is.
Yeah.
And that.
You think 6 months from now, it will continue to be an acceptable statement that learning loss occurred and that the issue in public education that needs to be addressed is reversing learning loss? Or no?
It depends on how well certain journalists do their job, I guess. I don't know. You know,
like I think that's what's interesting to me. Is this indicative of how much that conversation has changed? Or is this another example of people saying whatever they need to say?
And then in 6 months, they'll be like, yeah, that was a mailer. Stupid.
Yeah.
Don't blame
or just ignore us.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. But I, you know that joke that people say like, and this happened and I was arguing this and then he just said it.
Yeah.
Like that's what this feels like to me. Like
you specifically were attacked by people for describing the phenomenon that is now table stakes.
It's just what they do. Yeah.
Wow.
Okay, so also one of the big races is this race for city council, District 2, another coastal district. Jen Campbell, the incumbent Democrat, is running against Linda Lukacs. She's the Republican, and she has a lot of, I think, arguably more representative views of that the district shares probably in a large part, you know, that doesn't want people there. she's on board with the don't want people here argument. And she says, she sends out this thing about Jen Campbell's. This is a mailer from Linda Lukacs's campaign that says, Jen Campbell's record of neglect and failure. And she says, on homelessness, quote, in our neighborhood has exploded under Jen Campbell's watch. She hasn't provided effective leadership. Now, two rows down is another column, and she says, Jen Campbell's record of neglect and failure, protecting our coast and preserving our neighborhood's character. She says, quote, despite the objections of local residents and constituents, Jen Campbell voted for major new developments in Point Loma and Claremont that will increase density, traffic, and pollution. She voted to remove the coastal height limit. So, this is right next to each other. We have a complaint about homelessness. And then right below it is a complaint about homes. It's like doesn't even occur to them that that's a contradiction. Mm-hmm. It's just homes are bad, but so is not having one.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good one. All right. So on that, on a related topic, I do have one, which I love, which is a yes on Measure C.
Okay, yeah.
Uh-huh. And this is a yes on Measure C that is specifically targeting Republicans.
Okay, so Measure C is the coastal height limit. The midway area is west of I-5, and you can't build higher than 30 feet.
Yeah. And so this mailer... I'm presuming was sent to Republican households. On one side, it says Republicans support Measure C. It's got a picture of Mark Kersey and Scott Sherman. And then on the other side, it says yes on Measure C, protect single family homes. Mm-hmm. Now, if you pay enough attention to city politics that you have listened this far into this episode of this show, and I mean, if only that, if this is the most you've ever done, you already pay enough attention that you know that this measure has mostly broken down on a pro-development, anti-development stance.
Mm-hmm. Right.
There are people who oppose the measure who may try to quibble with that framing, but those people are all anti-development people who just don't like when I say that.
Yeah.
But it's true.
Yeah.
None of them are actually pro-development. This is a measure that is asking people, what's your vision of San Diego? More development or not?
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. So they say Measure C protects single-family homes. It's a tailored message for Republican voters. And underneath it, there's a photo of Kensington.
Mm-hmm.
And a bunch of single family neighborhoods.
Does it label it Kensington or just?
It's the sign.
Obvious.
It's the sign of Kensington. Then it looks like maybe like a hillside in maybe like Bankers Hill, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
Maybe Golden Hill. It's Golden Hill, actually. It's a hillside of Golden Hill. some townhomes that are like tract homes that maybe are in like, I don't know, Tierra Santa or something, and then like a little park. What does Measure C do? Here is what you're looking for. Some plain spoken explanation. What does Measure C do? First bullet. Maintains single family home zoning in beach communities and other neighborhoods.
So because it literally doesn't do anything for those neighborhoods, it maintains them.
It maintains them.
Got
yes.
it.
Yes. Since it what it doesn't do is change single family home zoning, it maintains single family home zoning. It's accurate.
Yeah. Nerds coming after me for something that's clearly true.
True. Yeah. All right. Yeah. What does Measure C do? It protects current abortion access.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
It doesn't change that.
Yeah. It's true. But yeah. Come after us for that.
Yeah. I mean, under no circumstances could anyone dispute the fact that Measure C provides continued levels of support for the ongoing war in Ukraine. Next bullet. Mm-hmm. Protect single family home zoning by adding more housing for low income San Diegans to a commercial zone, underlined, not single family home neighborhoods.
Yeah.
Now, so there is like the crumb of an honest argument there that like you could even arguably say is like supported by urban research, which shows that one pretty powerful anti-gentrification tool is to build housing in other areas. If you don't want people to with money to go buy up the housing stock in South Crest and Barrio Logan, one way to do it is to build a lot of housing in Linda Vista.
Yeah, I mean, you can think of it like
that's not untrue necessarily. There's only so many people out there with money to buy homes, and if you don't build them somewhere else, they'll take their money somewhere else to buy them. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, like you do see things like areas with it, like City Heights, where people can't afford to buy homes in North Park. They have enough money for a home. They go to City Heights and they pour that money into buying a home and then renovating it up to the standard of what they might have otherwise been able to buy in North Park. Right?
It's like a parallel to like a flood argument, right? That if you're dealing with like sea level rise, you should like cut out waterways for water to go into.
Right.
And this is the same thing. It's saying like we got this crush of housing needs, so let's channel them, like
put them there
through these areas that we don't like anyway.
Yes,
and they won't. The water won't get to your house.
Places. Yes. Yeah. So there you go. That's the Republican the argument pitched to Republicans to go yes on C. Oh, there's a third one. There's a third one that in fairness we should allows the city to rebuild the 54-year-old sports arena with a modern sports and entertainment hub.
That's the most direct, accurate thing. Like the you could not build the sports arena again there under the current law. You have to vote for this if you want that to be rebuilt because it wouldn't be allowed. Mm-hmm. It's grandfathered in.
Yeah. Nice. Protect single family.
Yeah. But that's the top thing it does is protect single family home. We're going to take a quick break. On the other side, it's the Voice of San Diego election draft. Stay with us.
Join culture creator Ramel Wallace, museum CEO Micah Parzan, philanthropist Erwin Jacobs, and urban agriculturist Diane Moss on Season 2 of Stop and Talk, a podcast about the future of the San Diego region. How can we create a vibrant region that celebrates our cultural richness and economic strength? Find out and hear other San Diego experts on Stop and Talk. Discover seasons 1 and 2 now at stopandtalkpodcast.com. That's stopandtalkpodcast.com. Are you passionate about resolving conflicts and making positive impact in the world? Then USD's Conflict Management and Resolution Master's program may be for you. Learn to address conflicts at all levels, from personal disputes to global crises. Join the Kroc School's dedicated community fostering peace and understanding while you acquire practical skills to navigate diverse settings. Apply now and be the change you want to see in the world. Visit sandiego.edu/peace/VOSD. That's sandiego.edu/peace/VOSD. Are you looking to engage with regional decision makers, business leaders, elected officials, and industry professionals committed to improving downtown San Diego? Join the Downtown San Diego Partnership. As a member, you'll receive access to exclusive resources, exposure to special programming, networking functions, and additional opportunities unmatched by any other local membership-based organization. Join the driving forces behind the future of downtown San Diego. For a 10% discount, become a member today.
Okay, as we have done now for several cycles, we will begin our great 2022 election draft from the Voice San Diego podcast. We will choose the races going around in a predetermined order. Who gets to pick a race? You know, you pick a race. This is a race you want to see resolved, and you want to see soon how it comes out. So when we do our election night podcast, we will circle back and see how they did. So
we will defer to the draft tour about to walk us through the results of the things that they have drafted.
Right. So with the first pick of the Voice San Diego 2022 election draft, we're going to start with Andrea Lopez Villafana.
I'm so nervous.
You're okay. It's your first draft. I think, you know, you'll learn next year.
This is like too sportsy for me.
It has nothing to do with sports except that we have no other frame to make these decisions.
It's as unnecessary a frame as we have on this show. and it's become a tradition.
What's your choice?
Amara Campanajar and John McCann.
Chula Vista.
The Chula Vista Mayor's Race.
Going number one overall. Chula Vista Mayor's Race.
Yeah.
Okay. Talk to me. What are you going to be looking for and why?
I met both candidates, hung out with them during the primary, hung out with all the other candidates. And I think they're both really interesting individuals. And I think this race has just been insane. From when I covered in the primary, what people were most concerned about, to watch what the race has become, and how people have engaged with their campaigns of claims that Amara doesn't live there. Oh, now John is stalking him by hiring this private investigator.
I just got a thing this whole weekend about how McCann's getting a lot of support financially from a woman who was pardoned by President Trump for the five hour energy scandal. Remember that she was mislabeling things. It is nasty.
It just seems like so far removed from the people who I spoke with during the primary. And I find Chula Vista really interesting. And I think that it's a really interesting city. It's a really interesting point. A lot of people have big ideas for it, but they don't have big budgets for it. So I don't know. It's just interesting to me.
Yeah. I think it'll also be a bit of, I mean, we'll find out at the same time for everything. So bellwether isn't really the correct word, but like, if Amara doesn't win in a city that is heavily Democratic, Chula Vista has a significant Democratic voter advantage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we just looked it up. It's like 70,000 Dems, like 40,000 Republicans, and then like 40,000 decline to state.
And so if he doesn't win, I think we will be looking at a really rough night for Democrats. Now, what does a rough night for Democrats mean in San Diego County, where like there aren't that many Republicans on the ballot, period? Mm-hmm. You know, it's hard to say. You'd have to like come up with some proxy arguments about what measures, where people broke down ideologically on certain measures. But like, the advantage should so thoroughly go to the Democrat in this race that the outcome will, I think, tell us a lot.
Mm-hmm. On the other hand, as you found out through this process, when you followed the primary, like, name recognition matters in these races. Mm-hmm. And McCann's been a politician there for a long time. Like I said, they've done all they can to try to disqualify each other. And he's certainly run a lot to do that against Amara. Mm-hmm. And he's going to have that name recognition. He's going to have the support of the police and these kind of institutions. It's not going to be straight partisan.
Mm-mm. No, I remember when we had our live event, our live debate with them, a woman went up to me afterwards and she was like, I was having a really hard time figuring out who I was going to vote for. I'm a Democrat. But wow, I think it's going to be John. Like,
And yeah, I was there with you when she said that. I was like, oh,
okay.
That was just like a really interesting takeaway.
She felt like she couldn't trust Amar because of all the messaging about whether he lived in Chula Vista or not. And she had other reasons too. Like she felt like he wasn't actually involved in the community. Mm-hmm. Doesn't really matter where he sleeps. Like she had just never really heard of him, but she seen John around the community plenty.
Yeah, they treated that as like a criminal probe, like does he live here or not?
Yeah.
As opposed to like a question of was he involved here as a leader or not?
Which is frankly much easier to resolve.
Yeah.
And much more like poignant. It seems like it matters at the essence of the thing.
Yeah. And then, you know, like McCann though,
McCann kept stressing me. He's like, no, but seriously, let me walk you through the detailed conclusion about why I don't believe.
And then
he failed to walk anything through, but
it was just very hard to follow what he was talking about.
This will probably apply to a lot of things we talk about here, but before 2020 or before 2018, I should say, like the standard conventional wisdom in San Diego politics was that in off year elections, mm-hmm. Democrats turned out at far, far lower numbers.
Mm-hmm.
And so they punched below their weight electorally during those elections.
Mm-hmm.
And there was even significant like initiatives passed to take decisions away from primaries and push them to generals. Mm-hmm. And sort of an understanding that like certain types of candidates couldn't win in off-year elections or couldn't win at primaries. And then 2018 happened. And like that was just blown out of the water. That just didn't matter even a little bit. Democrats won everything in San Diego County. It was a great year for them nationally. And so like we haven't heard about that lately, but it's worth remembering that for like the 10 years before that, it was just like something everyone knew to be true. You didn't even talk about it that much because it was so obviously the case. And 2018 is just 1 year. 1 year doesn't make a trend. So it's possible that what we see this year is a return to that political norm where like mm-hmm. Republicans do much better in these types of elections.
Yeah, we looked it up. Congressman Mike Levin won his race in 2018 against an established prominent Republican in what was considered a very swingy district, Congressional District 49.
Mm-hmm. He won
60-40. Like that was how big that wave was. The anti-Trump, you know, the mm-hmm. kind of come home election. And I don't think we see anything close. And I do think we go back to, yes, this is going to skew.
Now, maybe not all the way back, but it's, you know, it trends back.
All right. With the second pick in the 2022 Voice San Diego election draft, it's my pick. And I'm going to pick Measure B. Measure B.
B is for Benz.
B is for Benz. There's basically three measures for the city of San Diego on the ballot.
Mm-hmm.
And two of them would drastically change San Diego's way of life. I mean, there'd be like a whole different neighborhood in Midway. And there would be, in Measure B, there would be a new fee on trash collection and some related policies that I think really changed how people's...
Okay. You've been a little overstated here. I mean, I don't want to be blasé about people operating on strained budgets getting a new fee attached to their life, but
I think I
currently get free trash service. If this were to pass, I don't think that my way of life would be materially different.
You would have to pay a fee.
It would change.
Okay. How many election votes are there that where it literally changes something about your life?
Okay. Okay. If that's the standard, sure.
Like,
okay.
Yeah. And that's, I think that's pretty. So it would change things pretty significantly is what I'm saying. Now, I'm
still going to wake up at the same time every day. Still going to do most of the same things. Still have a crippling coffee addiction.
And yet neither of those, B or C, are getting the attention that D is getting.
Right.
The project labor agreement discussion. We can get into that later. But I do think C or B is the one that like, will have the most profound impact on San Diego City policy and, you know, again, people's more direct experience with the city.
Yeah.
And so I think it's kind of crazy that, like, it has a really good shot of passing. Yeah. Again, for decades, it was seen as, like, this no-go. Like, it's, well, we if people would say, like, boy, the city needs more revenue for X, Y, Z. And they're like, well, what would you, where would you get that from? And they'd say like, well, we could start charging for for trash pickup.
Ha!
And they'd be like, yeah, good luck with that.
We're going to fire you from your new job at the Taxpayers Association for even being stupid enough to mention it.
Yeah. And now it's on the ballot. And it's like, and I think it's like this classic moment where they have to get it in now.
Yeah.
Again, in 4 years, it would be not allowed or whatever. This is, I think, again, a more conservative electorate, and it seems like it has a good chance to pass. So I really want to see it. I want to see the numbers. I want
to
see.
Yeah, I think that's the most interesting thing to me is like our ongoing understanding of like where the third rails of San Diego politics are, because this was long presumed to be one of them. For it to even be floated was sort of surprising and bold of Shawn Ely Rivera to push the issue.
Yeah.
And so now we get to like test it. Like, it's not often that there's like a perfect test for a matter of conventional wisdom.
Yeah. He broke the news that he was going to pursue this with our Lisa Halberstadt, a story that she did. Right.
Yeah.
And I remember I got a call from somebody after that and they're like, I cannot believe he's bringing this up. Like, that's just like a no go. It's just not going to go anywhere.
Yeah.
Seems like he's distracted. Doesn't know what he's talking about. And like, 5 days away from seeing it maybe being implemented.
Yeah.
It's wild.
Or maybe we'll learn
that
the people who were like, don't touch that, had some keen insight into the minds of the San Diego people.
With the third selection in the Great Voice San Diego 2022 election draft, Andy Keats.
All right. So the other one that goes right along with Measure B, the Ken to its Ryu, the Sub-Zero to its Scorpion. I will take Measure C.
Okay. So this is this same measure.
What?
I'm just leaving that there for all the fans. People will like it.
The same thing. Measure E in 2020 passed with 56% of the vote.
Yes.
It was Todd Gloria got 56% of the vote.
Yeah.
What was the other one we always cited that got similar?
Housing bond, which failed because it needed 66%, but it ended up having essentially the same percentage of support.
Right. So it was like a sign that like this is this housing need, this Todd Gloria big city energy.
this
keeps like, saying that.
This 56% 56% of the electorate, which is like sizable. You have 56%. You can
they
do
want
most
this.
Of it. They want us to grow. They want us to build housing. They're done with the politics of exclusion.
So unfortunately, for that
narrative,
the court decided that they hadn't studied it enough and the impacts of it weren't disclosed enough, and thus it was illegal, and now they have to vote again.
Which, the decision to vote again was a decision.
Yeah.
One that we discussed at the time. I know we wrote about it in the politics report. We probably talked about it on this show, that like, you had to really weigh whether that was a good decision, because now there's more negatives for it. At the time, the negatives that we saw potentially weighing it down from that 56 and change percent of the vote was you were going to be in an off-year election. So it's a potentially a older, wealthier, more conservative electorate that may not like this measure. And also, it had just lost in court. So you've got this negative story out there about the city breaking environmental laws to push this forward that could also weigh it down.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was a third issue that happened between then and now after the decision was made, which was they chose a developer to go through with the sports arena project and then had to go through weeks and weeks of negative coverage about the fact that the developer they chose had given $100,000 to a committee supporting the mayor's election campaign in 2020. And you know, which we also wrote about, and then a bunch of questions about him and the project and whether the project was really good and all this sort of things. There were particulars. And so there are structural factors that put this in a worse situation than it was in 2020. There are particular factors that put this in a worse situation than it was in 2020, all of which makes me just fascinated to see how does it do relative to how it did 2 years ago. This is the same measure.
This is the exact same
measure. As I said, like, you don't often get a clean referendum on conventional wisdom as we're about to get with Measure B. You really don't often get a clean revote on the same measure from 2 years earlier to measure against how did the electorate change? How did the particulars change? We get to see a lot. And I'll add that, like, because of that narrative about this getting 56, Todd Gloria getting 56, affordable housing measure getting 56, all of which people were very happy to tout as evidence of this ascendant big city movement.
The 56, yeah.
That this is kind of has the feel of a Todd Gloria midterm referendum to me.
Yeah.
How, you know, he's not on the ballot this year. He's not on the ballot for two more years. But how this vote goes is going to be as close as we get. This is the proxy we're going to be able to have for how voters are feeling about Todd Gloria, frankly. And I think it's fair because not only for the reasons I said about what people said after 2020, but because he decided to put this on the ballot again. He decided to choose a developer ahead of the election. He decided which developer to choose, and it happened to be a developer who had given him $100,000 for his election campaign. So I think all of that means that not only do we get to see how Midway is going to be changed, it's going to tell us a lot about the mayoral administration 2 years in.
Mm-hmm.
Or how people, it'll tell us a lot how people feel about the mayoral administration 2 years in.
Like how things have changed. Because think back, November of 2020 was still the dark part of the pandemic restrictions, and school wasn't open, and we were still in this
racial reckoning was top of mind in all of national politics and all of local politics.
Right. And I think that had a measurable impact on this discussion. Like, you know, everybody was a little bit sensitive about, you know, every discussion and whether they wanted to really get into it. And now they're not. Now they're like, they literally put out a flyer with a bunch of white kids playing soccer saying, like, this is what's at stake with this vote.
This is the no people, the no on Measure C.
And it's
people.
Like, okay, like, so I think that I'm in with you, like, going to be looking at it right away.
Yeah. With my next choice, I'm going to take the District 6 City Council campaign.
Ooh, good choice.
The District 6 City Council campaign I am interested in because I guess we are starting to see what races will look like now that basically every seat in the city of San Diego is dominated by Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
And this one, as it's taken shape, has really fallen into the same framework that Mayor Todd Gloria and his opponent, former Councilwoman Barbara Bree, fell into in 2020, where, for lack of a better term, it's like the keep San Diego as it is and protect what we have view of city politics versus the we can grow and welcome more people and become more exciting and more vibrant.
You know what's funny about that?
Yeah.
Barbara Bree is now running for assessor.
Yeah.
And I asked her what she thinks about that. Remember, she was an opponent to the height limit increase. Yeah. She was pretty skeptical of the trash fee.
Yeah.
And now she endorses both of those.
Yeah.
I think, like, you know, once you get that firmly like into the Democrat only, you don't have to make that distinction again.
Right, right. Interesting. Right, exactly. I mean, because what else are you going to do? You're running against a Democrat, and the contours of this race with Kent Lee are the same as the other one. He has the support of the Chamber of Commerce. He's got the support of the Labor Council. He's got the support of the Democratic Party. If you're Tommy Howe and you've been edged out of all of those things and you're thinking, well, how do I cobble together 50% plus one of the vote without those, you know, the basically the only organized political actors in the county, what do you go for?
Yeah.
What is your messaging plan? And I think, I don't know if this is the way it will always be, but so far, faced with that same scenario, he's made the same calculation that Barbara Bree made when she was in the same situation.
Yeah. So there's the question too about, this is an Asian empowerment district. Mm-hmm, will it remain represented by an Asian American? There's also the question about how well his, Tommy Howe's, name recognition factors into this. He's been running for, 4 years in this district? Mm-hmm. He's a former pretty prominent radio host in San Diego. But Kent Lee has a ton of institutional support. And yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing what happens there too.
Mm-hmm.
All right, with the fifth pick in the 2022 Voice San Diego election draft, Lopez.
I'm going to go with another mayor's race, National City.
Oh, you took it.
Sorry. Sorry. You can talk about it too.
No, I will. I could. No,
I guess I originally wasn't paying too much attention to this race until you guys started writing about it in the Politics Report. Because I think that as a reporter who covered like San Diego neighborhoods, but also occasionally the South Bay, I always felt or thought at least that, you know, Alejandra was like the choice for everybody in the community and had, like, her decisions aligned with what people in National City wanted. But I feel like something's changed.
Yeah. So incumbent Alejandra Sotelo Solis, that's the question. What has changed?
Mm-hmm.
Because for a small place like mm-hmm. National City, with an incumbent running for re-election, it seems very difficult for that incumbent to lose re-election unless they have like really significant scandals or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And she doesn't.
No.
So what happened instead was a series of fallouts with her traditional allies, the mm-hmm. Democratic Party, labor, unions wanted to oust the city manager, and she stood behind the city manager. These kind of minor squabbles that for whatever reason turned into massive political problems mm-hmm. for her. And this seat matters in the regional system as well. Who represents National City could have a vote on the regional transportation agency, all those places. And so, yeah, does the insurgent, the city councilman who's running against her, take it? Does their fight between him, Jose Rodriguez, and her, Alejandra Sotelo Solis, allow a third candidate, the former mayor, Ron Morrison
yeah. who's won like a dozen elections in National City, meaning yeah. like lots of people there.
Talk about like name recognition.
Yes, right. Yeah. Like the most name recognition.
Yeah.
So yeah, like it would be crazy to overlook the possibility that he could sneak in a three-way race.
Mm-hmm.
What did when we had our debate with them, what was the feeling you got about like how the race was coming together and what they thought of each other?
Kind of tied to what we were talking about earlier with allies, you know, like little things that happened with allies leaving. I think Jose might have mentioned during our debate that, you know, he was once a supporter of hers and he once really, you know, worked well with her or whatever. But now he's running against her and he would be someone who would be supporting her as the incumbent to be mayor again. But
yeah, I mean, at the heart of this story is the challenge a politician has
mm-hmm.
in not just winning an election, but then maintaining their network.
Mm-hmm.
You can see this throughout any democratic system. There's people who do really well at that, and there's others that don't.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like she in particular has had all this trouble like just holding on. And the guy who ran against her was her ally.
Yeah. And he said so. Like, he said that he's supported her in the past and now he's running against her. And do you remember where she said something like there's points where she's the favorite child and like there's points where you're not. And this is just a point where she's not the favorite child. And that was really interesting.
And also there was that really interesting moment when we asked her about the other city councilman, Marcus Bush.
Mm-hmm.
He had decided to take his endorsement away from her
mm-hmm.
and give it to Jose Rodriguez instead. And we asked her about that.
Mm-hmm.
And at first she was like...
But she didn't see it that way.
Yeah, at first she kind of like denied that it happened.
Mm-hmm.
Like she was kind of like, you can't take your endorsement away.
Mm-hmm.
Like you've endorsed me.
Like procedurally, you can't.
It's done.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, it was a really interesting sort of window into what she saw as like loyalty. Like
mm-hmm.
you can't take it back. And Marcus Bush was like, well, yeah, he literally sent her a cease and desist letter saying, like, you
yeah,
got to stop saying yeah. that I endorsed you. So it's just a, yeah, really, it's a small place as far as compared to like these other cities, but it has mm-hmm. big implications in regional government and just a, it's also a proxy battle, it seems like, right? We were talking about the Democrats running against each other. Another bigger one was the David Alvarez versus Jorge mm-hmm. Gomez assembly race.
Which in previously, she's not mentioned this as much lately, but this summer, Alejandra told me that she thinks the real reason people have turned against her is that in that race, she supported David Alvarez over Georgette Gomez, and that's the real reason people turned against her.
Yeah.
Shit, that as that has faded in prominence, it so too has it faded in her explanation of why she's facing these headwinds. But yeah, it's there's no question that there's these sorts of blue on blue races are creating odd new politics that we're still figuring out, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You might have deduced there's three candidates running, which means that you do not need a majority to win this race. It's the plurality, whoever has the most votes or compared to the others.
Mm-hmm.
With the final selection in the Voice San Diego 2022 election draft, it's me, Scott Lewis. I've got three. I don't know what to do. I should have made this decision.
You have to pick one.
I don't think the school board race is going to be as competitive, so I'm not going to say that. And the sheriff's race, I'd love to say, and it's interesting, but I'm not going to say that. And the Congress race, we haven't followed it as well. It was a good one. I'm instead going to go with the race for assessor.
I don't know why I thought you were going to do that one, and you did. Yeah.
Well, it's just really...
It's just like such a boring title.
I know.
But it's an interesting thing.
It's not, though. You don't have to admit that. Yeah. These are two like well-resourced candidates that they decided to go against each other in this race for a truly boring seat. There's Barbara Bree, who's had a whole career.
Yeah.
She's not going to do much after this.
She walked away from a city council seat when she didn't need to necessarily to run for mayor.
Yeah, she's not going to run for governor or whatever. So why does she want this race? She's raised a lot of money. She's put a lot of effort into this.
Mm-hmm.
Jordan Marks, this is what he wants. He wants
been
to
like
go
building
do this.
To this for years.
He wants to do this. He wants to go to Rotaries across the city.
Yeah,
and about what the assessor does for the rest of his life.
Let me tell you, he's so excited about that. Like you talk to like political consultants that like. And I'm talking about like Democratic political consultant types. The number of people who say like Jordan Marks is a political machine.
Oh, it is.
People are impressed by his ability to raise money and win support.
He is a vacuum for raising money. He is incredible at it. And so does that
to do in an obscure race is indicative of like a keen political talent.
Yeah. So she's also got these resources. She got the support of the party. Has she pulled all the triggers possible to oust a guy who has a little bit better name?
He's sort of like a pseudo incumbent. He's tried to position himself as the pseudo incumbent.
Yeah, he has a better designation on the ballot. It would seem like chief deputy assessor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and so does the partisan makeup of the county finally? Push her forward, or is the vote going to be so much more conservative this midterms that it's not? It's just so many questions. There's so little polling, and the polling I have heard about has like 60% undecided. Like, what's that going to do?
What is this office?
Yeah.
I mean, in recent history, we've not seen a Democrat win any of these countywide races. Mm-hmm. Now that might happen elsewhere. That might happen at the sheriff's department if Kelly Martinez wins and she has lots of establishment support that had long gone to Republicans. So that one like confuses things a little bit about bucking that trend. But this one is clean. This is a genuine Democrat versus a genuine Republican in a countywide race where no Democrat has won countywide in a very long time, if ever. And so we need to got to see it, right? It's one thing to project what could happen based on demographics or districting or voter registration or, to forecast turnout in some way. But like, I've not seen it. I've not seen a Democrat win a county race.
Yeah. Well, what'd you think? Your first election draft? You're happy with your team?
Yeah. Are you going to be able to like win? April comes around and the NFL draft is in front of us. Are you going to be able to be very authoritative about it?
No.
It's going to be like Bryce Young. Got to take Bryce Young. Number one. No question about it.
I did. Actually, I had dinner with my friends a couple months ago and they were talking about the 49ers coach. And that was the first time ever my friends talked about sports.
What were they talking about? Kyle Shanahan?
I think it was him. Yeah. It's like some handsome coach. Maybe it's not 49ers.
Maybe Sean McVay. Giants?
Maybe the San Francisco Giants coach?
I don't know.
I'm revealing who I think is handsome.
Sean McVay, the Los Angeles Rams coach, and he played the 49ers recently. Oh. He's often described as handsome.
Well, they were saying
he's got a handsome guy haircut, for lack of a better
now
word.
Now you're describing who you think is handsome. They were saying that there's TikTok videos that people think this coach is so handsome, and that even on TV they hold the camera on him longer than they do with other coaches. Oh.
Interesting.
Anyways.
I'll look into this.
Yeah, I'd like to.
Wow, that's off my radar. I spend a lot of time following sports, and whatever that TikTok trend is off my radar.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right. We'll see you Tuesday night for our special podcast on the election results. Thanks for listening to the Voice of San Diego podcast, the most popular public affairs podcast recorded in this section of San Diego, covering local elections and local politics, and we'll do a special podcast session on Tuesday night and Wednesday morning. It will be available. We are the most popular public affairs podcast that does all of that. Keep up with our election coverage and all of our reporting with the Morning Report, our most popular product. Get it at vost.org/newsletters. That's vost.org/newsletters. I'm Scott Lewis, CEO and editor-in-chief at Voice San Diego. Andrew Keats is our managing editor. Andrea Lopez Villafana is our managing editor as well for Daily News. And Nate Johns, our producer, great producer. He's a good guy. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week.